When Tom meets Nadia Stasky, what kind of accent does he use? Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record, speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Locale Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis!
Hello and welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns, episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian and I'll be your host. This is episode number 116 being recorded Sunday, April 21st, 2024. And today I'm going to be talking about season 4, episode 14, Operation Anne. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. And just a reminder, this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. So what's going on, everyone? I thought we could start this episode with a little bit of cicada talk. I thought we'd maybe change it up, and I haven't talked about cicadas in a week. So I'm just kidding. No more talk about cicadas until my home is covered in them. But what I wanted to talk about was getting old. Talk about getting old all the time with my seemingly all the time injuries, just from like getting up and doing random things. But last night, Joni and I, we went out to dinner. The kids were gone. They stayed over at my in-laws. So I was like, all right, let's go out to dinner. So we went out to dinner at like 5:15 p.m. because it's like at like 4 o'clock, we were both like, is it too early to get dinner? So, you know, we thought we'd wait a little bit longer. But anyway, we went to like a tavern type place, I guess. So like a, you know, just like a bar slash, you know, restaurant. One that's right by our house. And we haven't been there, I don't think, since we moved in. But like we had been there before we moved in. And it's a nice little place. Last time I was there, actually, at this place, I'm not going to say the name of it, but Shug, you'll remember, you were there. We did office trivia and we won. That's right. It was me, listener of the show, Shug, maybe once or twice listener of the show, Jessica, my sister, and then Heather, my other sister. I think she may have been there. I'm not sure. But I know it was definitely at least us three. And yeah, Jessica answered like 95% of the questions. But yeah, we kicked ass for the office trivia thing and we took first place there. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm very good with office trivia. However, the thing was, like, when you had to answer the question, you just had to run up to the front and basically, like, put your, you know, you would write it down and then run up there. And so I think if there was a tiebreaker, it was like whoever got up there first, something like that. But anyway, so yeah, there was a lot of them that, like, I knew the answer for, but some of them was just like, oh my god. And so yeah, sure, you'll remember that. But anyway, back to the story. So we get there and you know, the place is like already pretty dead, I guess, by the standards of how big it is, because again, it's only 5:15. It is a Saturday night, but you know, it's not that late and it's getting warmer outside. So the hostess, you know, grabs us. She's like, okay, yeah, come with me. So we walk like through the bar area. It's like, all right, it's kind of hopping in here. I mean, oh, there's people scattered about. And then they walk us like into the little area, you know, that they open up sometimes when there's just overflow. Like it's usually used for parties and stuff, but tonight they must have been just using it for like the early birds. Cause we're like, yeah, cool. Like it's nice. It's hopping in here. And then it's like, we just walk right through that into this little room. And there's like one other couple in there. And they're like in their 60s and they're not talking to each other. Like one of them's on the phone and the other one's just like staring at, I don't know, the table, whatever. But, you know, and I'm totally fine with that because I don't, you know, I like to be able to hear people. But it's like they put us at this table right next to these people and there was no music or anything playing. So it was kind of like, all right, well, I guess we're going to have to kind of talk just so they wouldn't. Yeah, it was kind of weird. And like, well, we were there for probably 45 minutes. Like by the time we left, it was like probably half full. So we were just, and it was starting to get a little like louder in the room, but it's just like, man, like I don't know. I mean, like, we don't look that old, but I guess, yeah, when they just saw us, though, and how tired we probably look, because I hate using that excuse all the time that it's like, I'm tired. But it's like, man, having kids, like, especially kids that are in activities right after school, it is, oh, like, by the time you get done doing everything, it's like you've got an hour until it's bedtime. It's like, oh, God. But I do love my kids. So, oh, we watched yesterday. I'm not going to do filler, or I won't put this in filler because I'm not really going to talk about it. But finally, watched Top Gun Maverick. Man, that was a really fucking good movie. I'm not a fan of the original, probably just because I've never seen it. And truth be told, maybe I've mentioned it on here before, but I don't really care for Tom Cruise as a person. I'm not going to get into that. But as an actor, I mean, he's fantastic. And if you haven't seen Top Gun Maverick, you don't have to see the first Top Gun, but it is such an exciting movie. Like, the more I was watching it, because I watched it twice, actually. I watched it by myself, and then I watched it with Joni, because we had been talking about, because this came out, I think it came out like 2 years ago, but we were like late to the party, obviously. We always wanted to watch it, because just how, like, the reviews and everything. So we finally watched it, and we both really, really enjoyed it, but there was a lot of nitpicks I found in there, and more just annoyances, not really nitpicks, but yeah, I would definitely recommend that. So what I am going to do, though, for filler this week is, and I don't even know, you know what, I think it was a month or two ago, oh man, it was quite a long time ago, when I recorded with Holly from Parks Pals, which again, check out season 4, episode 19, Live Ammo, over there on the Parks Pals podcast, because I did that episode with her. And then whenever season 4, episode 20, The Debate, comes out, it's still, she hasn't released that one, but I'll be on that one as well. And, you know, I'll share on Instagram and everything. But we were talking, I don't even know if it was when we were recording or if it was just in downtime, but we started talking about different MCU characters that are also like Parks and Rec characters. So actors who have crossed over in both of these. And I talk about the MCU all the time. You know that I'm a big Marvel fan. Again, Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's the MCU, for anyone who's not familiar. But I didn't just stop at the MCU. I just went Marvel in general. So Marvel movies. And I'm sure there are a ton of characters and actors I'm going to leave out who probably have like really small maybe roles as extras and whatnot. But I don't know, just because I'm a big fan of Marvel and a big fan of Parks and Rec, I thought I would bring you Parks and Rec X Marvel. I don't know, I wish I had a cool theme song for that. But anyway, all right, so I only have 13 here, so this isn't going to take that long. But I thought, hey, you know what, for filler this week, let's actually talk about Parks and Rec and not some stupid movie that I watched. So, all right, so starting off, I'm going to tell you who the actor is, and then I'm going to tell you who they play in Parks and Rec. And if it's like kind of an obscure character, I will explain that to you. And then I'll tell you who they play in the, you know, in Marvel, the MCU or whatever Marvel movie. So first up, Mike McGill. Now, Mike McGill in Parks and Rec, he plays Sanitation Steve. That is the name of his character. And that's in season 5, episode 11, Women in Garbage, I think it's called, or Women in Trash. I think it's Women in Garbage. So that's the one where April and Leslie get on the garbage truck and they actually do a day, you know, kind of in the life of a garbage man. So Sanitation Steve, and some of you might know him from Shameless, the TV show. He was also on that. The show's been off the air a couple years, but he was like one of the bar flies, like always sitting at the bar with the guy Kermit. But anyway, he plays, like I said, he's Sanitation Steve in Parks and Rec. In the MCU or in Marvel, he plays General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross in What If season 1. So yeah, he's actually just a voice actor for Marvel there, but there you go. Next up, this is an easy one. Paul Rudd plays Bobby Newport, obviously, on Parks and Rec, only for a few episodes, but one of in my last poll, actually it's still John Ralphio, but Paul Rudd is a close second as Bobby Newport, like a top fan favorite character for Parks and Rec. In the MCU, he plays Ant-Man / Scott Lang. Awesome character. He's so likable. It just kind of sucks, though, that third Ant-Man movie, Ant-Man, the Quantumania one, is just garbage. Like, it sucks. I mean, there's some funny scenes, and Paul Rudd does what he can, but I mean, I think it's just a bad movie. It was poorly written, and like the CGI and everything is like too much. So, next up, Patton Oswalt. So Patton Oswalt, you'll remember in season 5, episode 19. What is the episode called? It's the one where he plays Garth Blunden. He's the one who famously has the filibuster where he talks about Boba Fett coming out of the Sarlacc pit. And then we actually kind of saw that come to life in the Boba Fett series. So that was pretty funny. But anyway, yeah, Garth Blunden is his name, if I didn't say that already. He's the guy that Leslie challenges to like go live colonial times with him. And he's just like, yeah, you know him. Like, he's in a ton of stuff. He's a hilarious actor. And he is actually a voice actor, a very prominent voice actor as well. And he plays MODOK. In I keep saying MCU, but I'm trying because like there's MCU, which is Marvel Cinematic Universe, but then there's also just Marvel like cinema, which is like some of the Spider-Man stuff and whatnot. I know it's very confusing, but anyway, MODOK is an animated show that is done in the vein of like Robot Chicken. Like, it has very similar animation to that, and with another one of our Parks and Rec actors will. When I get to him, he's also in this TV show. But anyway, Patton Oswalt voices MODOK. A very funny show. I believe it was on Hulu. I think it got canceled after one season, but hysterical show. Really funny. And speaking of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, that weird-ass character that you meet about halfway through that's like the floating head with the machine guns, that's MODOK. So that's MODOK in like the Marvel, like the actual movie version of him. Patton Oswalt is the voice of the animated version on the show MODOK. It's very funny. I highly recommend it. Next up, Tatiana Maslany as, Tom's girlfriend for two episodes, season 6, episode 5 and 6. She plays Nadia Stasky. She's the one that comes to Pawnee because whatever the foundation she works for, they need to rent out a park just so they can have like an event there. And actually that kind of has to do with what my trivia question was. So I'm not going to tell you what Tom does there, but anyway, she is only in the two episodes, like I said, and I just watched those episodes recently. I don't really care for this character, Nadia. She's very much like, she's a very condescending, another one who's like, oh, well, once I'm done here, I can get the hell out of this town. Like, very, like, Parker Posey-esque in that role. And Leslie's ex-best friend, Lindsay Carlisle Shay. Anyway, sorry. So Tatiana Maslany is Nadia Stasky in Parks and Rec. And then in the Marvel, the MCU, she plays She-Hulk / Jennifer Walters. She's a great character, but the show sucks. It was so bad. she'll be back, but I don't know if the show will. So... but a lot of people liked it. I thought it was terrible. So, but she's still likable. Next up, this is kind of a quick one actually. And I admittedly have not seen this MCU piece that Bradley Whitford is in. And Bradley Whitford is in season 4, episode 19, the episode I talked about earlier that I reviewed with Holly, Live Ammo. So Bradley Whitford is Councilman Pilner. He is the one that puts the little ships inside the boats. And he seems very like pretentious about that. And he's the council man that Leslie takes over for when he is done with his term. So in the MCU, he plays. All right. So there was a series. They don't really do these anymore, I don't think. They were called Marvel One Shots. And they were kind of like just little 10 to 15 minute like teaser things, like almost a short, like a Tubi episode, if anyone remembers. Not Tubi, Quibi. Quibi, if anyone remembers Quibi, like their short-ass TV shows. But anyway, so Marvel would do these things, and you could pretty much find them on, like, YouTube and whatnot, and on the Marvel homepage. I don't think they were ever released on, like, physical form. Maybe they are as, like, bonus features. But anyway, he plays Agent Flynn in that. Yeah, it's just a Marvel one-shot. Agent Carter is the name of it. He plays Agent Flynn. He's just kind of, like, a dick in that. Bradley Whitford plays plays an asshole in, like, everything. next up. Martin Starr, he was in last week's, it's this week's episode, actually, Kevin. He is the guy who works at the Snow Globe Museum, the very just, hey guys, condescending, like he plays the same role in like everything. He's very good at it, but I mean, Martin Starr can be a bit stale at times because, like I said, he's always playing the same character. It is funny when it calls for it, though, like in this episode, it's great. In Marvel, he plays Mr. Harrington, who is one of Peter Parker's teachers in that the Spider-Man trilogy. So yeah, he's the one that goes on the trip. Him and JB Smoove go on the trip with them in Far From Home, which is the second one. He's great. Next up, another one that's in the Spider-Man trilogy, J.K. Simmons, who plays Mayor Stice in Season 5, Episode 17, Partridge. That's the one where Ben goes back home, and he's supposed to be getting honored, but they actually trash him, and they make some bullshit award for him, and it's more so just to kind of drag Ben through the mud. But yeah, he's another guy. He's like a very intimidating actor, and he is always just like, he always fucking brings it. He's like always yelling and shit, and he's just like, yeah, he's scary. Like I said, in the MCU, he plays Jonah. Well, he plays J. Jonah Jameson in all three of the Marvel Spider-Man movies. He might be... No, I don't think he was in any other ones. Maybe in teasers afterward. But yeah, Mayor Stice, Season 5, Episode 17. Next up, another fan favorite here, Catherine Hahn. Obviously, in Parks and Rec, she plays the amazing Jen Barkley. And she's one of the newer ones, newer kind of additions to the MCU. She plays another fan favorite. And I think it's just because, you know, kind of speaks to you how great Catherine Hahn is, because I don't think Agatha Harkness, which is who she plays, is all that interesting of a character, but I want to watch more of it because I love Catherine Hahn, I'll be honest. And this is a very popular character right now because it goes great with like the whole Hot Topic vibe. I'm not trying to be like a smart ass or anything like that. I'm being 100% positive or like true about this. And I think it's going to be great for Catherine Hahn and for Disney and everything just with this character, because she has a TV show that is coming up as well, which will star Aubrey Plaza, who's the next one. However, there haven't been, at least that I can find, any confirmed pictures of Aubrey Plaza in her costume as Rio Vidal. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's going to be a former love interest of Agatha Harkness. So those two together can be awesome, because I'm trying to think, in Parks and Rec, I think they only have like a couple scenes together, and it's when Ben and April are in Washington, D.C. Like, there's the one when Jen Barkley's like, hey, she's telling everyone great job because the election's over. And April's just like, eh, screw this. Okay. And she just grabs all their shit and just runs out in the middle of Ben talking. And Jen Barkley's just like, wow. She's like, I don't know that girl, but I like her a lot. So that's like one of their only interactions, I think, if not the only interaction. But they're going to be awesome together in this show. I can't wait for that. Over to April's husband, Andy, played by Chris Pratt. You got him, like I just said, as Andy Dwyer on Parks and Rec, and one of my favorite characters in the MCU, if not like he's like a top two or three. Another one being Rocket Raccoon. I mean, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy are just such a very well-written group of characters. They're awesome. But anyway, plus I love Chris Pratt. I think he's a very good actor, well, in certain roles. I don't need to get into that, but as Star-Lord / Peter Quill, I think he's hysterical. I think he's a great actor. He brings a physical everything he had in Parks and Rec, but I mean, like, in not so much of a comedic, a more fun action way. But yeah, Chris Pratt, Andy Dwyer, and Star-Lord Peter Quill. Okay, over to a similar character. Well, not a similar character, but a character who is only pretty much linked to Andy Dwyer, and that is Lord Edgar Covington, played by Peter Serafinowicz, I believe is how you say his name. He is in two episodes of Parks and Rec, the first one being, Season 6, Episode 1 or 2, London. He's the guy that Andy ends up staying in London to work for. The guy that's like, you know, my family owns that building, and all of those buildings over there. But he's like a man child. So like him and Andy, they race, or they fly like helicopters, and they go and get ice cream and all this stuff. Anyway, in Marvel, this guy plays Garthon Saul. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Also from Guardians of the Galaxy, he's one of the guys from the Nova Corps. You'll see him, like, yeah, he's with, like, Glenn Close and John C. Reilly, like, that group there. But, yeah, this guy used to play the Tick also. He was pretty known for that. So, maybe not, like, a huge name actor, but definitely a guy, if you saw him, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I definitely know who that is. All right, Adam Scott, my favorite character, Ben Wyatt, man. And this is when I was just like, maybe I should just do MCU just to keep this stink out of the show. He played Ben Parker, Ben Wyatt, and Ben Parker, played by Adam Scott. He played Ben Parker in Madam Web, which I talked about, I don't know, probably like a month or two ago. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. The hype around how bad this movie is no joke. It's a terrible movie. But anyway, I'm not just saying it to be biased because Adam Scott's a great actor and he plays arguably my favorite TV character of all time. And that's arguable, but he's definitely my favorite actor on my favorite TV show. And he really does. He gives it his all, I think, in this role. And I hate to say that because the movie sucks so bad, but he is like a likable part about the movie, at least, because there's not much else. So hopefully there's no more of those movies made and Adam Scott can just be like, okay, well, I did my comic book movie. You know, I'm part of Marvel, so I'm good. All right, next up, I talked about this before. I kind of teased it with the other character from MODOK. That's Ben Schwartz, of course, known as playing John Ralphio. Probably the most fan favorite character on Parks and Rec as far as like not main cast, you know, not Ron, not April, not Andy, not Leslie. He plays John Ralphio, and then on the show MODOK, he plays MODOK's son named Lou. I can't remember what their last name is, but he plays a character that looks very similar to John Ralphio, but he's like a little kid, but he's got the same voice as like Sonic and everything, you know? So it's basically just Ben Schwartz just kind of talking, but like quickly. So, and then the final one, Sam Elliott, who plays Ron Dunn, which is Ron Swanson's doppelganger, you know, Dunn and Dunn. He plays two characters actually in Marvel. In the Hulk movie from way the hell back when, like the early 2000s, the one with Eric Bana or Banya, I think it's Bana, and Liv Tyler, he plays, another character we talked about earlier was the first one I said. He plays the real life version of General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross. Like I said, Mike McGill, he was the first one. He voices the animated version of him. But Sam Elliott plays the live-action version. And then also in The Ghost Rider, the first movie, that terrible movie with Nicolas Cage, he plays the caretaker, which I don't really remember the character because I saw the movie one time and it was like, this is a bad movie. So this is where I'm usually just like, all right, let's talk Parks and Rec. But I mean, I've been talking Parks and Rec for the last like 15 minutes. So let's keep talking about Parks and Rec. Season 4, Episode 14, Operation Anne, directed by Morgan Sackett, written by Aisha Muharrar. Cold open! It's February 13th, and you know what that means? It's Galentine's Day, the holiday Leslie introduced to us back in Season 2. We will see her and the girls celebrate this one more time in Season 6, actually, in another episode called Galentine's Day, which is the second episode called Galentine's Day, but there's no one or two after it. It's just called Galentine's Day, like the other one. All right, if you'll recall, Galentine's Day is a holiday to celebrate lady friends. Leslie thinks this should be a national holiday. She even sends another email to Congress. Just great. She pulls out her phone. Dear Congress, it's Leslie again. Cuts away. Among the ladies, we haven't seen her in a few episodes. It's Marlene Griggs-Nope, Leslie's mom, who's in a pretty steamy relationship herself. You know who's not in a relationship, though? Ann Perkins. So there's a really, like, so this is a very Anne-heavy show, episode, sorry. So it's kind of nice because, you know, I feel like she's, you know, in The Comeback Kid, she got to do a lot of, as Leslie's would-be campaign manager. But we've had a lot of just kind of Anne in the background. So this is a very Anne-heavy episode. And it's great because everyone at the table is seemingly in a relationship. Even Donna, she says that she's got a guy waiting in the car for her. She's like, "Dad," and everyone looks over at her. She's like, "Don't worry, I rolled the window down." But April's talking about how she's with Andy. We know that Leslie's got a great relationship with Ben. And, you know, like even Leslie's mom, Marlene, you know, she's in this steamy relationship. So Leslie asks Anne, and Anne's just like, "Oh, you know, I'm focusing kind of just on myself for now. And sorry, guys, I know it sounds really condescending, but that I want you to be happy. But no, I'm really happy." It's just so funny. Like, it's great acting by Rashida, like trying to be like not be condescending, but she can't help it because she's miserable because she doesn't have a date. So it's a great scene. And then, of course, it just ends with April being a smartass, like, yeah, we are all happy. All right, so we start off at City Hall, where Anne tells Leslie that she's okay not having a special someone, especially around Valentine's Day. However, Leslie can see that she's not okay, so Leslie vows to find Anne love. So this is just like a really quick scene with these two running into each other in the hallway, and it's kind of like, okay, Leslie just gets her idea for what she's going to be doing for the next 21 minutes of our time to watch. Over to the conference room, Ron does something unexpected when he welcomes everyone to the meeting and thanks them. But in a great reveal, we see that there's a pile of ribs in front of him and realize that he was talking to his food, not the Parks Department, which is just amazing to me that in the middle of this, not even the middle, I mean, obviously this is the very beginning of it, but Ron's got like a styrofoam, you know, like a to-go container of just like a huge thing of ribs. And it's awesome like that. It shows his face and it does look, you think he's talking to the group and it pulls out. He's like, oh, sorry, I was just talking to these ribs. So Leslie is thrown this meeting, telling everyone that they need to find a match for Anne for the annual Valentine's Day dance. Tom can't help himself when he asks, does anyone know if Anne has any Indian in her? Leslie tells everyone not to respond. Don't do it. Don't do it. And everyone knows what's going to happen, you know, if anyone says, what do you mean? So, of course, Jerry is just like, I don't think she does. And Tom just goes, would she like some? So then, of course, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, that's such an old school joke. It's like, oh, you think she's got the Italian in her? It's like, oh. Over to Leslie's office, Ben surprises her with a Valentine's Day gift. It's a plush otter with a sea captain's hat on that she calls Yotter Otter, which I guess was apparently a character from one of Leslie's dreams, where it was like a billionaire playboy sea captain who just happened to be an otter. So yeah, Leslie's just like, oh my god, I thought we weren't getting gifts. And then she gives him his, of course. It's a cryptext, which as Ben points out, it looks kind of like a small pipe bomb. It's essentially like a puzzle. It's just a cylinder shaped thing that's just got a bunch of like numbers and letters on it that you kind of like a briefcase almost, how you have to just kind of spin the thing up, you know, like I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, though. But anyway, you have to solve the riddle, and then the thing will open up, and there's a clue inside. So the clue she gives him is a five-letter word that encapsulates their third date. Ben assures Leslie he'll get it open, but then quickly, in a talking head, he's just like, I have no idea what she's talking about. So now we're over at Chris's office, and Tom checks in.
Hey, man, you okay? Still thinking about your ex?
Millicent Gergich has literally torn my heart from my body and replaced it with a thick slab of sadness. I may never smile again.
Cool. So I found a DJ for the dance, and his name is DJ Blunts.
Tom, this is a publicly funded couples dance. I don't think it's appropriate for people to be getting wet with sound.
So, like, it's, you know, it's just such a dick move by Tom, but I just love his first response. It's just like, cool, to Chris's misery. And then also, I love the DJ Blunts reference. If you'll remember, he was the Entertainment 720 house DJ, which I think it's kind of weird that Tom doesn't mention that, because he comes in and he's just like, oh, I found a DJ, DJ Blunts. And he, like, shows him, like, his business card or a flyer or whatever. But I don't understand why, like, he didn't just say, he's like, oh yeah, he was the guy that worked with me at Entertainment 720. Because he's in like four or five episodes. I mean, very small roles, and I think he only talks in one episode. Tom Haverford's in the building. So Chris says that he will DJ instead. Then Tom does it again when Chris says he's completely alone. After like a 2 or 3 second silence, Tom just goes, all right, I'll see you tonight. And he just leaves. It's so, like, again, Tom is definitely, like, he's being kind of like a bad friend here, but like everyone else, I think he's probably just, like, tired of Chris's sobby bullshit all the time. Like, every ended relationship just gets so blown out of proportion. Like, I could see it being annoying as one of his friends. And I hate to say that, like, it doesn't, like, not, you know, like, if your friend is in pain, it's like, oh my god, that's enough. You've done this enough times. But I think, yeah, the magnitude that he just gets so bent out of shape, I think, like, maybe his friends are just like, we have to stop kind of like Kate, and I don't know. Now we get my favorite scene in the episode, where Andy sees Ben playing with the cryptex and tries to help. So Yeah, Ben's just playing with this thing. Andy comes walking down the hallway. Oh, cool, a cryptex. He grabs it right out of Ben's hand. And I just love the interaction here, because Ben is like, he's like, how do you know what a cryptex is? And Andy's just like, I know what things are, and kind of like looks at us, like breaks the fourth. Well, they always break the fourth wall. He looks at the camera. And then so Ben starts explaining it to him, and he's just like, so Leslie put a clue inside this thing. And Andy's just like, no. Like, the way it's so funny, this interaction. Like, first the I know things, and then like Ben's story is so like amazing. He's just like, no. But anyway, so Andy is just like, well, you know, because again, he tells him what the clue is. It's something that had to do with their third date. And Andy's just like, did you try fuck? But it's like, boop. So it's bleeped out. And like I said last week, I think bleeped out swears are so much funnier than actual swears in like comedies like this. And so Ben's just like, well, it's five letters. And Andy's like, oh, maybe add an S. So he's just like, yeah, I don't think that's what it is. So then Andy's like, well, yeah, man, I really wish I could help. You're like the second smartest person I know. Maybe we should go to the first smartest person I know. And then they cut over, and of course they're in Ron's office, and Ron's like really interested in like what Ben's telling him. He's just like, all right. So he gives him the clue, and Ron's just like, did you try fuck? The same. It's so, oh my God, it's so funny. And of course, again, it's bleeped out, and it's so hilarious. And Ben's just like, why does everyone keep using that clue? So anyway, it's awesome. Ron does figure it out. He figures out how to get the thing open. However, he uses the hammer that's conveniently inside of his desk, which I love it, because it's like, what the hell? Why does he have a hammer in his desk? I don't question this at all with Ron Swanson. So anyway, he just pulls out a hammer, smashes the thing, and just like, there's a little piece of paper in there. I don't have written down exactly what the whole clue said, but Ron figures out that what it means is there's the city hall murals, the famous ones I talk about all the time. Some of them, she put hearts on them, and any of the ones that have hearts, it's the first letter of that. So then you got to put them all together. And there are a lot of them. We'll get to those soon, but there's a bunch I've talked about already on this show and that we've seen, but you hear about a few more. It's pretty crazy. Over to the Valentine's dance. Chris is an awful DJ, as he won't stop announcing how sad he is, and the music he's playing is hilariously ominous. It's just like, like, it really sounds like something like that would be in a movie where like a ritual, like suicide or some kind of just like torturing is going on, or something like sadistic. It's just, it's really creepy. It's just then Jerry shows up, but he's not alone. He brought a date for Anne. However, the man responded to Jerry's email that said, man looking for man for night of casual fun. So good. And he's just like, so the guy's like, he's like, I'm going to go inside. He's like a really good looking dude. Like, when Leslie first sees him, she's like, well done, Jerry. It's like, yeah, he just responded to my ad. And Tom's just like, he's like, you brought a male escort. He's like, what are you talking about? And Leslie's like, please get your gigolo out of here. And Jerry's just like, oh my God. So of course, thought he did something nice, but nope. Now we're back with Ben, Ron, and Andy, who are fully invested in Leslie's scavenger hunt. Andy tells us the names of all the murals he found. All right, so these are the murals I was just talking about that we have not seen yet. We haven't seen the actual, well, murals, I guess. Cornfield Slaughter, Lament of the Buffalo, Needless Slaughter, Slaughter Gone Wrong. This next one is my favorite. Eating the Reverend. I can't imagine the horrors of what that mural would look like, eating the Reverend. Oh my God. It's Raining Blood, which is actually funny, side joke. Sadie, my daughter, she had her band, like they had a band performance at her school. My mom and dad were there, and I just, like, when they were playing a song, it's like, oh, this next one's gonna be called. And at one point I literally looked to my dad and I was like, Raining Blood by Slayer. It's kind of funny. I forgot that. Maybe that's why I had it in mind, because I just did this review recently. Anyway, and then the final one is called Death Everywhere. Unfortunately, we don't get to see these. Like I said, Andy just kind of... So I would love to get a tour all around, like, yeah, that floor of City Hall, just to see the paintings. Ron figures out that the second clue says, no food finer, clue three is at JJ's Diner. All right, back to the Valentine's dance. April brought a date for Anne, and it's a wonderful suitor. April's best friend, Oren. So Leslie immediately just lays into both April and Oren, telling him that he's a morose mummy and he needs a wake-up call for how he presents himself. So I love this, like, just how, like, the consistency with how much Leslie just dislikes Oren, because it goes back to the first mention of Oren from season 3, where Leslie already dislikes him. And it's, yeah, so this is before, because the first time we meet him is April and Andy's wedding. So this is like a few episodes before this. It's just kind of like a throwaway line where Leslie's like, oh, and I also have some questions about your friend Oren, you know, and she's just like, to us, we don't know what that means, but it's just like kind of coming into a conversation. But it's hilarious because it's like, oh, so Leslie's always disliked Oren. All right. Desperate to find Anne a date, Leslie introduces her to one of her lawyer friends, but Anne seems more uncomfortable than excited. So I remember the first time I watched this episode, because like, Leslie brings this guy over and it's like he actually gets some speaking lines and stuff, and I thought this was gonna go somewhere, but it doesn't. It just cuts to commercial and we never see this guy again. So that's fine though, because it's just another character we would have to get to know, and we don't need any more at this point. So continuing the scavenger hunt, the guys are now at JJ's diner. They figure out that the next clue is in a whipped cream can. That clue says something wicked with a book, of course, referring to Ron's ex-wife, Tammy Too, and then something about a gumshoe. This one's insane, actually, because in a lot of these clues, like Ron's really good at these things. You find out later in the episode that he loves scavenger hunts, but he, so what happens here is the next clue, she says something about a gumshoe. And of course, the clue is in a piece of gum stuck to the bottom of Ron's shoe. It's incredible. She put it like in the little, because he's got dress shoes on, like loafers, whatever. So there's that little like dip right where the heel is, kind of. So she had it in there, and it's so cool. I mean, it's like highly improbable that it would have stayed on this long, but it's pretty awesome. So Ron knows this is about him, because when it says something wicked with a book, like I said, they're talking about Tammy Too. Ben finally admits that they're never going to solve this riddle in time, so instead they're just going to go to places Leslie and Ben have gone on dates and ask around for the clue, so the three of them just split up. Back to the dance, Chris's music is turning everyone off, except Oren, who he sees swaying with the music. It's just very quickly him in the background, and he is actually smiling. I believe this is the only time we see Oren smile, because he's just such a, I don't know, just such a dark character. There's one time in the episode when they're trying to find someone to run animal control, Oren applies, and he does say a part where he's like, I'm reading your mind right now, where you can argue that he's making kind of a grin, like his face, but that's more of him trying to be a smartass, like, yeah, I'm controlling your brain as we speak. This scene here is actually Oren enjoying himself listening to this horrible, like, creepy, ominous music. It's awesome. So Tom goes over and he asks Chris to change the music, and he suggests that he go find a rebound chick since there's lots of attractive women at the dance. There's a very funny scene with this too, because like Leslie says something later as well, but they're just basically, they're trying to get him to get over, Millicent Gergich. And he's like, I can't stop thinking about her. I actually can't stop thinking about Jerry either. You know, Jerry and Millie share 50% of the same DNA. And then he just like looks longingly over at Jerry, who's like just eating something. And it's a really like funny scene because Jerry notices this and he starts kind of looking behind him like, what the hell's he looking at? And Tom's just like, stop staring at Jerry like that, because Tom even gets creeped out. So it's great. All right, next we're at the Homferman. Homferman, Homferman Snow Globe Museum, where we meet a no-nonsense man named Kevin. This is who I talked about earlier, played by the hilariously deadpan actor Martin Starr. He's the one that actually kind of... Yeah, I said actually me and Holly talk about it, but I think what I was doing, the research or watching this episode for the first time for the show, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I forgot that he's in the MCU, and so maybe that's what prompted it. But anyway, he gives us a great line when Ben asks how he's doing. He says, well, it's Valentine's Day. I'm working the late shift at the Snow Globe Museum, so I'm right where I want to be. Just, again, in his smart-ass tone like he always does. Kevin tells Ben that Leslie's next clue is under one of the snow globes. After a minute or so, Ben finds it. Back over to the dance, we meet one of Leslie's friends who she's trying to set up with Anne. He's a good-looking guy. Unfortunately, he's attracted to his sister. It's just a really quick one. It's like, man, Leslie, you never told me that Anne was this beautiful. of course, she's not as beautiful as my sister, but, you know, there's laws. And it's just like, okay, let's move on. So Leslie goes over and she asks Tom to talk with Anne while she figures something out. She also gives April shit for not helping and tells her to hide under a table with Oren. So this part, like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I love that Anne or Leslie is trying to find, you know, someone for Anne, but I hate that she gets pissed off at April. April does not like Anne. This is known, but like Leslie does the whole like, well, you know, like if she was in your situation, she'd help you. And it's like, yeah, well, I wouldn't have asked for her help, which April wouldn't, even though she conveniently asked for her help a couple episodes ago when they needed to figure out what to do with Andy's concussion or whatever. But anyway, I digress. So yeah, when she tells us, she's like, you can just go under the table with your friend Oren, and they show that there's a snack table like right next to where they're standing with a table cover over it, but you can just see Oren's fingerless gloved like hands like slowly pull back. So he's been hiding under there, but his hands were out, so he was exposed. But it's just like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? So Tom starts bringing some possible suitors over to Anne, starting with Harris, the animal control idiot. We find out that he's been to 308 fish concerts. So real quick, just a little tangent. Years back, many, many, many years back, decades ago, I dated a hippie. And she was very much into the band Fish. And now it was already just an unlikely pair, and we didn't work out, obviously, which is for the better. But I was big into, still am, punk rock, hardcore, metal. And she was, like I said, a hippie. So it's like very interesting clash of like cultures there, because she was very influenced by that. And I was very into like my music and everything. Not to the point where I had like a mohawk and like spike bracelets and stuff, but like I was like a skater and, you know, like into punk music. So I remember one time, like I had never really heard Fish. I just knew about them. And we were like, we're listening to it. I was just like, sure, we can, you know, I might as well check it out since I'm supposed to hate this music. And I did. I thought it sucked. I mean, it's like, I give any band credit for doing what they do. To any Fish fans out there, no offense to you, just my opinion. I didn't care for it. I just didn't really care for that kind of music, like jam band stuff. But she's telling me, like, these guys are so good. I mean, it's like, you just, they're all like playing their own songs. And it's like, well, they're doing what every band does. So I don't know. Maybe it was just the way that she just kept like talking about Fish. It was like, oh God, I don't know. So anyway, I thought that was funny. Him talking, he's like, no, I've been to 308. Because it's like how Fish fans are. They travel with them and then they just like brag to everyone how many shows they've been to. It's like, again, no offense to any Fish fans. Sorry. All right. Next, we meet a man named Bill, who's turned away right when he starts to off with, well, I'm an amateur juggler. And like Anne, she seems happy with Tom. Just like, so you can kind of see, it's like, oh no, like what's happening here? Because they do like the thing where they're cutting away, but it actually shows Anne like kind of smiling, looking at Tom without him knowing it. And she's like, oh, you know, he's kind of nice. So it's like, oh God. All right. So next we're at The Bulge. We haven't seen The Bulge since last season. I believe this was in the season premiere for season 3 when Leslie is on, Anne and Chris are on the date, and Leslie is like trying to get Anne to get Chris to give them more money or whatever. So they end up going to The Bulge for whatever reason. And that's when where Chris goes up to buy a drink, and like everyone, they're trying to buy drinks for him, and he's like, no, I'd like to buy all of you drinks. So it's a very similar situation in this one. Also, The Bulge is where season 2 started off, when with the penguin marriage, the gay bar that was very excited about Leslie doing that, so they like honored her. But anyway, so in this situation, it's awesome. So like Ron shows up and he's there for the scavenger hunt. I don't want to say that he's oblivious to where he's at, because, you know, Ron's lived in Pawnee, I think, his whole life. So he knows what the Bulge is, but he doesn't care. I mean, like, he's just there for the scavenger hunt. And it is so funny because, like, the second he walks in, it's like heads turn. The bartender, too. I mean, like, he's like, oh, yeah, he's like, I'll get that for you. The thing from Leslie, he gives him like the size, he sizes him up, you know, like looks down head to toe and everything, kind of does a smile. So Ron gets the next clue, and he's very excited. He's like, whoo! He's like, gentlemen, have a wonderful evening. And he walks away. And there's no joke, there's like 10 guys in the bar, their heads all turned to watch him walk out. It's such a good scene. All right, so back at City Hall, we get a great joke as Andy's about to smash a glass case that has a clue inside of it. So I have no idea where the hell Andy got a crowbar from. But yeah, there's a glass case that has like a raccoon or something in it, and he's just about to smash it open, but then he's like, oh, and he realizes that the back of it, it's like a few inches off the wall. There's purposely like no glass on the back so people can like put their hands in to rearrange this little display case or whatever. So he gets the clue, and then it's awesome because as he's walking away, he just tosses the crowbar right on top of it, smashes it anyway. So again, why does Andy have a crowbar? It's so funny. It's just like, and then the fact that it's like, he doesn't need it anymore. So he just tosses it. Maybe like he saw this clue and then he walked down to like the maintenance shed or something. I don't know. And like grabbed this crowbar, but it's so funny. Like that he doesn't need it and destroys it. It kind of reminds me of whatever episode that is when Andy was about to whip the Pepto-Bismol at the wall. And also it kind of reminds me of Saw 2, awesome horror movie, when there's a woman who finds the antidote and she puts her hands up inside the glass box that has the razor things that like go up, but then when you try pulling back out, it like just, oh, it's so brutal. But anyway, in that movie there is a key hanging behind the box that just like, if you would have taken like two extra seconds, you would have seen that instead of just putting your hands up there and ultimately dying. But anyway, great scene in both Saw and this movie. Back at the dance, Leslie tries to get Chris to change the depressing music, and he tells her that he thinks he may have peaked with Millicent Gergich. He thinks about Anne and he waves over at her, both of them still single. So then Tom, Donna, and a few other people, they change up the music. They put on Party Rock Anthem by the group LMFAO. Which I guess I was going to be like, which is, and kind of like talk a little about them, but I don't know anything about them except they have this song and it's like a uncle and his nephew. That's it. So that cheers everyone up. Not Anne though, who's very thankful for Leslie for trying to help out, but decides that she's just going to go home having had zero luck with any of the suitors. A little bit later when Leslie's leaving, she notices Anne still in her car putting makeup on. Ooh. Just then, a flustered April runs out to tell Leslie not to worry about what Anne's doing or who she's going to meet. A confused Leslie thinks it's Chris, so she decides she's going to follow Anne. Quickly, we go over to the scavenger hunt. Ron finally tells us in a talking head that he loves riddles. Also, Ben is upset because they're still missing some of the clues. Next, we see that Leslie has followed Anne to see who she's meeting with, but a call from April convinces her to leave it alone. So, like, this episode takes like a really weird turn with April's demeanor. Like, it'll pay off, like we understand why, but it doesn't make any sense if you're watching this for the first time. Like, April, who didn't give a shit before, she gets kind of like yelled at by Leslie, I guess, a little bit, but then all of a sudden something happens with her character where she's like really like, Leslie, you get like she's hiding something for Anne. So it's just like, it doesn't make sense. Like I said, it'll pay off, but, and you all know what it is because you've seen this, but you got to admit, like when you're watching this, it's just like, I think they went a little too hard on like with this, with April trying to just be like, what the fuck? Just let it go. You know, I don't know. It's even more obvious because April's not that person. So for her to go so hardcore like that. So yeah, it's just like a 180, like a 180 degree shift in her attitude towards Anne. Leslie decides to let it go and she leaves. So we're back over to Ron's office where the three guys can't figure out the last clue, but then Ron pulls a thought out of thin air. Like I said, it's fun watching him figure these things out, but the last clue, he's like, is there something that you and Leslie used to disagree on, but you've since come around to? And Ben's just like, oh, he's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. So he takes off and Ron's happy that he helped him figure it out. And they figure out that the meeting place is Lil Sebastian's memorial site. So at the site, Leslie and Ben meet. She's impressed that he figured it out, but then tells him about Anne's date with Chris, or at least that she thinks he's on a date with Chris, which pisses Ben off too because of all the BS that they had to go through because of Chris's rules, like all the hearing and all that stuff. So the two of them, like if this is true, they're just like, fuck that. Like we had to go through all this bullshit. Like they're going to have to do it too. So they decide that they're going to go and call them out. So now Leslie and Ben are at the restaurant Anne went to, but they're outside sneaking around and, oh my God, it's not Chris that Anne is with. It's Tom. Oh, God, I hate this. This is the start of, well, I'm going to dwell on this. I'm going to complain every time it comes up in the future episodes. And this goes on for, I don't know, like a handful of episodes. It's not too, and it's really not that bad, but this is just like a desperation part. I don't know, for this writing team. It's like, really? Anne and Tom. So at this point, it's really nothing, because like even Tom is confused. I mean, he was coming back from the bathroom or something, or maybe he was just getting there. But because they first see Anne sitting by herself and then Tom shows up, and Leslie does this hilarious like horror scream when she sees that it's Tom. But, you know, they're just like, what the fuck? Like, we have no idea what's going on. And then April shows up. And this is where you're like, what the fuck is going on with April? And you find out that April's the one that set them up. And it's like, okay, fine. Like, so she's trying to, like, she doesn't want Leslie to know, because obviously Leslie thinks it's horrible that she's, that her best friend, who could be, in Leslie's eyes, who could be with any man she wants, is with Tom, who Leslie is friends with, but she knows Tom is like a, you know, he's like kind of pathetic. So she's just like, what the hell? But it's just, yeah, I think it's a weird turn for April's character, the way that she goes about doing all of this. Just like, no, just don't worry about it. Like, it just seems, I don't know. I don't really care for it, but probably just because of what it's going to lead to, which is these two dating for a few episodes, like the stupidest storyline in the show. Actually, it's probably the second one. The first one is probably when when Leslie and Ron don't like each other for like 3 episodes in season 7. All right. So April explains why she set them up. So after Leslie gave her shit about not helping, saying that Tom was the only person to make Anne happy all night, she's like, you know what? That's exactly what I told her. Like, if you can't find anything, why not go for the one guy that has made you laugh all night? So I hate this relationship, but whatever. There's a lot of funny stuff in here, but I'll try not to go too over the top complaining about it moving forward. In the restaurant, even Tom is confused, like I said, but Anne is very specific with him about what's going to happen. We're going to have a drink or two. We're going to talk. We're going to get to know each other, and then we're going to go home separately. All right. So then we just have the tag of the episode. We're in Leslie's office. Ron kind of pops his head around the corner, and he reminds her that his birthday is coming up. The fuck? It's weird. We know how much Ron is very secretive about his birthday, and why would he remind her about his birthday? Oh, yeah. Because he wants her to make a scavenger hunt for him like she did for Ben. So it's a very funny scene. She's like, hey, you know what you did for Ben? I definitely don't want you to do that for me. Okay, Ron, no problem. Yeah, just like all that intricate stuff you did, that's definitely not something I want. Okay, Ron, yeah, I understand. And then it's him just like, I totally want that. And her smiling, so funny scene. So yeah, we find out that Ron Swanson is a big fan of scavenger hunts and riddles and all that kind of good stuff. It's awesome. All right, so on IMDb, this episode's sitting at an 8.1. My thoughts, the scavenger hunt is awesome. I always love I love scavenger hunts too. I mean, like, this kind of stuff is insane. But it's like escape rooms. They're fun. If you've never done an escape room, I highly recommend doing it with another person. Very difficult. I've never tried to do one on my own, but there are usually people in there helping you, because if you don't get it, you're stuck there forever. I got nothing. All right. Andy and Ron, the whole, did you try fuck? Both of them saying it. Like, again, one of my favorite scenes overall in the entire series. And the fact that it's bleeped out both times. And then Andy just being like, oh, add an S. That's what it is, because it's a 5-letter word. I love that Oren is in this episode. He doesn't even speak. He doesn't say anything. But again, it's awesome just because it shows him smiling and he's excited about this terrible music. And he looks good under the lights at the dance, because he just looks even more like I said, like Leslie just being like, Anne is not some morose mummy. And then she's like, yeah, whatever, offense intended, Oren. It's just so good how much Leslie hates him. Chris is so over the top in this episode, but him being the DJ is hilarious, because the music is just like at one point Tom is like, I forgot the exact thing, but he's like, Chris, this is like, man, it sounds like the soundtrack of a monk who committed suicide. And Chris is like, it is. the start of Tom and Anne, I hate it so much. And then the April 180 change, the 180 degree change, where she just went from not giving a rat's ass to all of a sudden being so like team Tom and Anne that she's like confusing Leslie and all of us. Didn't care for it. So anyway, pretty good episode though. But that's going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. Please like and follow on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast and at Parks Rec Memes. Next week, I'll be covering Season 4, Episode 15, Dave Returns. Thank you for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name's Brian, and I'll see you next Tuesday. When Tom meets Nadia, he nervously starts talking with a British accent.